This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Langston Hughes, W.E.B. Du Bois, James Weldon Johnson, County Cullen, Gwendolyn Brooks, and Lucille Clifton are among the great 20th century writers represented on the new double CD anthology, Our Souls Have Grown Deep Like the Rivers, Black Poets Read Their Work. The CD collects historical recordings along with readings by contemporary poets, including a rap record by Public Enemy. My guests are two of the poets represented on the CD, Sonia Sanchez and Michael Harper. I asked them each to choose a track by a late poet who inspired them. Michael Harper chose a poem called Strong Men by Sterling Brown. I asked Harper to tell us a little about Sterling Brown and the poem.
Well, Sterling wrote this poem in 1929, and Sterling was a virtuoso, knew everything, studied the blues, was a classical scholar, knew a great deal about Shakespeare, knew Chaucer, knew John Milton, knew the Romantics, and at the same time he knew his people, loved his people.
Well, let's hear this poem by Sterling Brown, recorded by Sterling Brown at the Library of Congress in 1973. This is Strong Men.
Strong men. The strong men keep coming on. Carl Sandburg. They dragged you from homeland. They chained you in coffles. They huddled you, spoon fashion, in filthy hatches. They sold you to give a few gentlemen ease. They broke you in like oxen. They scourged you. They branded you. They made your women breeders. They swelled your numbers with bastards. They taught you the religion they disgraced. You sang, keep inching along like a poe-inch worm. You sang, by and by I'm gonna lay down this heavy load. You sang, walk together, chillin'. Don't you get weary. The strong men keep a-coming on. The strong men get stronger. They point with pride to the road you built for them. They ride in comfort over the rails you laid for them. They put hammers in your hands and said, drive so much before sundown. You sang, ain't no hammer in this land. Strikes like mine, baby. Strikes like mine. They cooped you in their kitchen. They penned you in their factories. They gave you the jobs that they were too good for. They tried to guarantee happiness to themselves by shunting dirt and misery to you. You sang, me and my baby gonna shine, shine. Me and my baby gonna shine. The strong men keep a-coming on. The strong men get stronger. They bought off some of your leaders. You stumbled, as blind men will. They coaxed you unwontedly soft-voiced. You followed away, then laughed as usual. They heard the laugh and wondered, uncomfortable, unadmitting a deeper terror. The strong men keep a-coming on, getting stronger. What from the slums where they have hemmed you? What from the tiny huts they could not keep from you? What reaches them, making them ill at ease, fearful? Today they shout prohibitions at you. Thou shalt not this, thou shalt not that, reserved for whites only. You laugh. One thing they cannot prohibit, the strong men coming on, the strong men getting stronger. Strong men, stronger.
And that was Sterling Brown reading his poem Strong Men, as recorded at the Library of Congress in 1973. And that poem is included on the new CD, Our Souls Have Grown Deep Like the Rivers, Black Poets Read Their Work. And I have two poets in the studio with me, Michael Harper and Sonia Sanchez. Michael Harper, you chose to play that poem. Sterling Brown read it really well. I'm wondering if you feel he influenced your style of performing your poetry.
Well, I certainly did. I heard his voice on the FM radio one day. I was driving down the freeway, and I just literally couldn't believe the resonance and voice that he had. And, of course, I went down to the public library in San Francisco. I was living in San Francisco at the time. And there was a Folkways album that he had made of his poems, and I read them. And there was no collection at the time. He had been in anthologies. But the voice, the resonance, and the range that he had was tremendously influential, even before I met him. Luckily, I met him in 1972, and we were close until he died. But he was a preeminent man. Not only was he a tremendous scholar and teacher, a magnificent teacher, but he was a tremendous reader of his own work.
Did you get close to him, and did he give you any advice about what it would be to live life as a poet?
Well, he gave me a lot of advice. He was known as an autodidact. I mean, you know, a short answer for Sterling Brown was an hour or more. He was an incredible man. You know, the first thing he told me was that black writers, by definition, were here to disturb the peace, that is to say, to tell the truth, and that the popularity, they couldn't expect popularity, and they couldn't expect to be in publication often, and sometimes they'd be running counter to the market, whatever it was. And he also had long experience with being out of print. And he used to say that one of the responsibilities for any black artist was to be true to the people. And if it took you to revolutionary stance, the reason why it was a revolutionary stance is simply because it was truthful. And so much of American society is based on lies.
Michael Harper, I'm going to ask you to read one of your own poems for
okay.
us.
Okay. I'll read Dear John to Coltrane.
That happens to be the poem of yours, or one of the poems of yours that's included on the CD, Our Souls Have Grown Deep Like the Rivers, but I'm going to ask you to read it for us.
Okay. Dear John de Coltrane, a love supreme, a love supreme, a love supreme, a love supreme. Sex, fingers, toes, in the marketplace near your father's church in Hamlet, North Carolina. Witness to this love in this calm fallow of these minds. There is no substitute for pain. Genitals gone or going. Seed burned out. You tuck the roots in the earth, turn back and move by river through the swamps, singing, a love supreme, a love supreme. What does it all mean? Loss so great each black woman expects your failure in mute change. The seed gone. You plod up into the electric city, your song now crystal and the blues. You pick up the horn with some will and blow into the freezing night, a love supreme, a love supreme. Dawn comes and you cook up the thick sin between impotence and death. Fuel the tenor sax cannibal heart, genitals and sweat that makes you clean. A love supreme, a love supreme. Why you so black? Cause I am. Why you so funky? Cause I am. Why you so black? Cause I am. Why you so sweet? Cause I am. Why you so black? Cause I am. A love supreme, a love supreme. So sick you couldn't play Naima. So flat we ached for song you'd concealed with your own blood. Your diseased liver gave out its purity. The inflated heart pumps out the tenor kiss. Tenor love, a love supreme, a love supreme. A love supreme, a love supreme.
It's Michael Harper reading his poem, Dear John, Dear Coltrane. Were you listening to, obviously you must have been listening to a lot of Coltrane while writing this. Had you seen him perform shortly before writing this?
Well, I began to watch Coltrane play live in about 1955. And I wrote the poem actually before Coltrane died. Coltrane died in 1967. I wrote the poem in 1966. And I was terrified because, you know, as poets, you sometimes have material select you. And I, of course, knew his music and listened to him live many times. I'd written about his great drummer, Elvin Jones, and McCoy Tyner was a friend of mine. We were the same age and pretty much grew up together. But Coltrane was a special figure, and he was not a terribly talkative man, and I had spent many, many times being in his company. But when I wrote this poem, I was terrified that I was, writing his death warrant or something. And the reason why the refrain, A Love Supreme, is because he himself had played that in 1964, and he and his musicians had chanted that. And it was a refrain, a kind of anthem, which became widespread certainly among the black community, the musical community. And Coltrane was the superior musician of his generation.
Speaking with poet Michael Harper, he'll be back with poet Sonia Sanchez after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are poets Michael Harper and Sonia Sanchez. They're both featured on the new CD, Our Souls Have Grown Deep Like the Rivers, Black Poets Read Their Work. Here's a track featuring Sonia Sanchez reading her poem Song Number 2, recorded in 1994.
I say, all you young girls waiting to live. I say, all you young girls taking your pill. I say, all you sisters tired of standing still. I say, all you sisters thinking you won't, but you will. Don't let them kill you with their stare. Don't let them closet you with no air. Don't let them feed you sex piecemeal. Don't let them offer you any ordeal. I say, step back, sisters, we rising from the dead. I say, step back, Johnnies, we dancing on our heads. I say, step back, man, no more hanging by a thread. I say, step back, world, can't let it all go unsaid, too. I say, all you young girls molested at 10. I say, all you young girls giving it up again and again. I say, all you sisters hanging out in every den. I say, all you sisters needing your own oxygen. Don't let them trap you with their coke. Don't let them treat you like one fat joke. Don't let them bleed you till you broke. Don't let them blind you in masculine smoke. I say, step back, sisters, we rising from the dead. I say, step back, Johnnies, we dancing on our heads. I say, step back, man, no more hanging by a thread. I say, step back, world, can't let it all go unsaid. I say, step back, world, can't let it all go unsaid.
That's Sonia Sanchez as featured on a new CD featuring African-American poets reading their work. I asked her to choose a track featuring a late poet who inspired her. She chose the poem For My People by Margaret Walker. Before we hear it, let's talk about Margaret Walker. Sonia, you said you met Margaret Walker. She was the kind of person you could pick up the phone and just talk to. What did it mean to you as a young poet to have somebody like her to commiserate with when you were getting your bearings as a writer?
She certainly was one who had gone through a lot here in this country, and she certainly was one who could give you great information on people who had gone before. I mean, you could call her when you were teaching Langston Hughes or anyone, and she would tell you some really relevant and pertinent information about those people. But the thing that one really loved about what we used to call her, Miss Margaret, was simply that she had a look. She had looked at this earth and made a decision to be a certain kind of poet, a certain kind of woman, and she never veered from that at all.
Sonia, can I ask you, this might be too personal, but can I ask you of an example of a time when you felt you really needed to commiserate with Margaret Walker, when something had happened with your writing or with your work as a teacher or a performer of your poetry, and you just really felt you needed her advice?
Well, I think the thing that finally happened with Margaret Walker, and I'm sure it probably happened also with you, Michael, with Sterling, is that at some point you were not the student, and you were not, and she was not the teacher, but you were friends. What I wanted from Miss Margaret a great deal was to hear how she had made it through. I think it's so important for many women to understand how some women had to navigate 5 children, had to work, had to go back to school part-time, had to farm their children out to relatives, had to take care of a husband who had been injured in the war, had to live on $6,000 a year and do all of that and pay mortgage. I wanted to understand how she then could look up and in her midnight hours, in her midnight mornings, still write poetry and still be sane at the same time and still be not only an inspiration, but also give us the brilliant Jubilee, to give us the brilliant poetry that she did. And it was amazing that she wrote as much as she did, considering all of those, all of the things that she had to, you know, that she came up against.
Well, let's hear the poem that you've chosen. This is For My People. Margaret Walker recorded this in 1954.
For my people everywhere, singing their slave songs repeatedly, their dirges and their ditties and their blues and jubilees, praying their prayers nightly to an unknown God, bending their knees humbly to an unseen power. For my people, lending their strength to the years, to the gone years and the now years and the maybe years. Washing, ironing, cooking, scrubbing, sewing, mending, hoeing, plowing, digging, planting, pruning, patching, dragging along, never gaining, never reaping, never knowing, and never understanding. for are my playmates in the clay and dust and sand of Alabama backyards, playing baptizing and preaching and doctor and jail and soldier and school and mama and cooking and playhouse and concert and store and hair and Miss Chumbi and company. For the cramped, bewildered years we went to school to learn to know the reasons why and the answers to and the people who and the places where and the days when. In memory of the bitter hours when we discovered we were black and poor and small and different and nobody cared and nobody wondered and nobody understood. For the boys and girls who grew in spite of these things to be man and woman, to laugh and dance and sing and play and drink their wine and religion and success, to marry their playmates and bear children and then die of consumption and anemia and lynching. For my people thronging 47th Street in Chicago and Lenox Avenue in New York, and Rampart Street in New Orleans. Lost, disinherited, dispossessed, and happy people, filling the cabarets and taverns and other people's pockets, needing bread and shoes and milk and land and money and something, something all our own. For my people walking blindly, spreading joy, losing time being lazy, sleeping when hungry, shouting when burdened, drinking when hopeless, tied and shackled and tangled among ourselves by the unseen creatures who tower over us omnisciently and laugh. For my people blundering and groping and floundering in the dark of churches and schools and clubs and societies, associations and councils and committees and conventions, distressed and disturbed and deceived and devoured by money-hungry, glory-craving leeches, preyed on by facile force of state and fad and novelty, by false prophet and holy believer. For my people standing staring, trying to fashion a better way from confusion, from hypocrisy and misunderstanding, trying to fashion a world that will hold all the people, all the faces, all the Adams and Eves, and their countless generations. Let a new earth rise. Let another world be born. Let a bloody peace be written in the sky. Let a second generation full of courage issue forth. Let a people loving freedom come to growth. Let a beauty full of healing and the strength of final clenching be the pulsing in our spirits and our blood. Let the martial songs be written. Let the dirges disappear. Let a race of men now rise and take control.
That was Margaret Walker reading her poem For My People, recorded in 1954, from the new CD anthology of African-American poets called Our Souls Have Grown Deep Like the Rivers. My guests, poets Sonia Sanchez and Michael Harper, will be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Sonia Sanchez and Michael Harper, two of the poets featured on the new CD, Our Souls Have Grown Deep Like the Rivers, Black Poets Read Their Work. You've both mentioned the importance of meeting Malcolm X. I'm wondering if his style of speaking affected you. I mean, because he was so powerful in the way he used words.
Oh, yes.
So did that have an impact on your writing or performing, do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
go on.
You know, for me, Malcolm could bring you to tears because the first thing he did was shame you. And he shamed you because he was so straightforward, so honest. I remember, and you know, we had recordings of his speeches that we played to ourselves and to groups of people, and then later on, when I was teaching in East Bay and a little bit north of Oakland, and we had people like Bobby Seale and various other people who were invited to the campus, you know, for outreach, for discussion, and whatever. It was always Malcolm that was the focus of it all, and you know, you left your mind in Africa. he would say, or any one of a number of other slogans. And I know the impact was great on Sonia, because at that time, of course, we were dispersed everywhere, but we were on the same page.
So, Sonia, what was the impact on your writing or performing style of meeting and speaking with Malcolm X?
Well, I think there was a dual thing. I think that one of the things that happened to any would-be writer at that time is that the moment you heard Malcolm speak, then your poems changed, the content changed, and also the way you delivered. We began to study Malcolm very carefully. We learned exactly how to read. I learned how to read a poem by listening to him. Because he was a master orator. He was a master person, you know, when it came to information. I began to infuse my poetry with African history, because he would mention something in a speech someplace, and you had no information on it. You run to the Schomburg. So you learn how to deliver your poetry by listening to him. So he was indeed a master teacher.
Now, I get the impression that music was also very influential on both of you. Mm-hmm. Michael Harper, do you feel that you have learned about language and its rhythms from reading with musicians, as you've occasionally done?
Absolutely. And the most important thing you learn from musicians is phrasing. And you learn it from the singers, the Bessie Smiths, the Billie Holidays, the Mamie Smiths, the Aretha Franklins even. But you also learn more than anything else about the authenticity of phrasing, because musicians take you to places that you might not necessarily want to go, and they go instantly to the transcendent. And, of course, the mastery of their playing is not technical mastery. It is spiritual mastery. It is to take you to a place that perhaps is not your mode. And when we are in performance with musicians, they take us to places sometimes we don't want to go. We're not prepared to go. They take us instantly there. And it seems to me that the pioneering efforts of great musicians, and Coltrane is just one of many, gives us a way, indicates the path. And of course, they're on the frontier, which is one of the reasons why we lose so many, because they're forced to live at the cutting edge of the society, and oftentimes that sacrifice to themselves. And I'm not only talking about drugs, I'm talking about the rigor with which they have to express themselves, bring themselves, and of course the pressure that black people in particular are under and always have been. The musicians are the frontier. They're on the frontier, and we have to learn how to follow.
Well, they were never protected, actually. You know, if you've ever been with musicians, I mean, really great ones, you're right. They do take you places you've never been before, and you go with them, and you realize that if they go here two and three sets at a time in one night, that is very dangerous. We do it maybe once with musicians, you see, but they do it two and three times a night. There was a time that these men and women played three sets a night in a smoke-filled club someplace. And you and I know that was not a healthy situation. So it's not just the obvious in terms of liquor, alcohol, and drugs, but it's also going each time to a place that is very hard to come down from. And an hour again, you're going up there again, too.
Sonia Sanchez, you teach at Temple University. Michael Harper, you teach at Brown University. You've both taught for a long time. I'm wondering if you feel most of your students are interested in poetry, and where poetry seems to fit in culturally with the students that you teach now. Has rap had an impact for better or for worse on their interest in it? Does rap translate to an interest in printed poems? Sonia, your thoughts?
Well, I think that that rap has certainly influenced many of the students who come into my class. I've retired from Temple, so I'm not teaching anymore. And they come in quite often rhyming, writing raps. But they also, you teach them also Haydn and Walker and Brown and Brooks and Baraka and all the people who have written before, and they understand that. I think the joy of rap is that it has certainly brought them back to poetry, and now you can feed them all of the what I call the masters, the people who've gone before. They come with a rhythm, they come with an idea of rhyme, and you give them rhyme and dictionaries, you make them understand the need to go other places, the need, besides getting up on a stage and performing, also sitting down in a room someplace writing and learning and understanding what form is, and you teach form and you make them deal with it in very real terms. And so therefore you get some of the young rappers like Mos Def and Talib and Rakim and the people who are really writing some most fantastically beautiful things, which means that they are writing poetry, not just rap.
Michael Harper?
Well, the best of hip-hop and rap music, of course, has a certain resonance and a certain kind of sustained, marvelous inventiveness that I think is in the best of all poetry. But I think that what young people have to realize is that they're not reinventing the wheel, that people have gone before. And what Sonia said briefly before was that she teaches literacy, and I think that's our responsibility, you know, for all young people. Young people are living in a contemporary time, and of course they think that the most important thing is the times that they're living in, but people have preceded them. That's why the tradition, that's why Sonia teaches the you know, a Margaret or a Hayden, that's why I teach a Sterling or a Gwendolyn Brooks. I mean, who's written a better poem than We Real Cool by Gwendolyn Brooks? I mean, it's amazing. It's an amazing poem. That poem was written, I think, in 1959. And it might be a master poem for the 20th century, for all I know.
Michael Harper and Sonia Sanchez. They're two of the poets featured on the new double CD, Our Souls Have Grown Deep Like the Rivers, Black Poets Read Their Work.